Book 2, Chapter 17. The next morning, they woke to a blaring horn. Dog popped up like he'd been ejected from a toaster and barked. "Shut up, dog," Cole said. His ears went down slightly and he stopped, but stayed alert. "What was that?" Leslie said. "Reveille," Belle answered, yawning and stretching under the sleeping bag. Joey leaned up, his wheat hair matted down, his eyes hard to open. The rain was gone and the sun hadn't yet knocked out the frigid air. Separating from Belle's warmth took a willpower that could only be summoned by the prospect of money. They filed out one at a time, scurrying to put on clothes. Skeet and Jethro woke before dawn and were hiding in the bushes around the cabin, waiting and watching for the four to leave with their packs. The guys and girls walked to the counsellor's cabin, where they used the private bathroom to shower. Skeet and Jethro waited for them to return. Afterward, the foursome returned to their cabin, where they dressed in tees, shorts and trail shoes. Then they proceeded to the dining hall for breakfast. Coz tied Dog to the tetherball pole. The mess hall was a massive room featuring exposed lacquered oak beams and matching oak floors with long wooden tables and equally long benches sitting before them. Breakfast filled the air. Aspen joined the group at the door, smiling with his hair slicked back, still wet from the shower. They loaded their plates with Daisy's help and started to chow down with Aspen, reminiscing about their adventures and sharing camp stories. All the tongues in the room wagged about moon pie, but Aspen brought up the subject of another wild foe. "You need to be careful out there. There is this one grizzly, Chuck, that has been harassing our campers on their campouts. The Forestry Service warned us that he has attacked a few tourists in the nearby park. Apparently, he has a fiery tooth, likes gunpowder, so pack up your bullets." "We'll be careful," Joey said, smiling at the group. "You have a bear bag, right?" asked Aspen. "Of course," Cosby replied. "Use it. Don't forget." "Might as well hang your bullets too," he laughed. Then he informed them the campers would be going on a 2-day overnight. When they finished eating, they thanked him and filed out with the campers. On the second-story porch, Aspen unfolded the contract Tuck had drafted in regards to the Hodges treasure that might be buried on his land and had each person autograph it. Then he told them goodbye, wishing them good luck. A group of campers came out and recognised Joey from the YouTube video. They all wanted his autograph. He signed some of their camp sashes with a Sharpie. Afterward, they went back to the cabin. Before setting off into the mountains, the crew packed up all the gear from the chicken they would need, foldable shovels, tents, sleeping bags, fishing rods, etc. Then Coz rubbed his gold necklace into Dog's nose a couple of times. Then they hiked out through the field past the gym. Skeet and Jethro followed a long way behind, watching them occasionally through a pair of binoculars. The group continued over the dirt road to a trail through the woods. After half a mile, they reached a swinging bridge over a stream. On the other side, they arrived at a small clearing on top of a hill that looked out toward mountains reflecting into a river that split the forest of pines in the lower valley. With the sun shining in the brisk mountain air, they hiked down the southern footpath marked the Red River Trail. The other path went through a forest, eventually following the north side of the river. After so many days in the car soaked with dog's farts, their muscles enjoyed the exercise. Flies swarmed and honeybees buzzed in the air. Joey led, Coz whistled songs while the ladies tried to guess them. The smell of eucalyptus, the hawks gliding around the valley, and the otters playing in the river reminded them of Teddy's stories about Luke and Sam fishing and running from bears. They knew that somewhere in the mountains, where a stubborn wind blew, Luke's spirit circled with the hawks, guiding them to the treasure. By early afternoon, they reached the foot of the river and stopped for a short lunch of jerky and trail mix. Dog barked at the fish, ducking his head in to grab one. After many attempts, he managed to snake out a small trout. His tail wagged with pride as he pranced over to them like a frolicking doe, displaying it to each person. Then he sat down and ate it whole. Sitting in the grass with the sun feeding his skin, Joey ran his hands through the green blades and looked at Belle's red hair shimmering in the rays. A painted lady butterfly with its patterned camouflage and large wingspan flitted around and landed softly on top of Belle's hand, just like at Isabella when one landed on her head. Everyone commented that she must actually be a butterfly because of their attraction to her, and Col suggested Joey must be one also because he was so drawn to her. After a while, it left. Col skipped a rock in the river, and Leslie grabbed the tail of his shirt from behind, jerking him to the ground for a kiss. In a bit, the group washed their faces and hands in the stream, then they took the thin trail along the river as it crooked upstream into the valley of the towering mountains. They passed a big waterfall, and by late afternoon they reached an area where the base of the mountain jutted out to the water's edge, tightening the path along the river. On it, a small circle was carved at the base, stained black, possibly with tar or ash. Up the trail, there was another big waterfall, beautiful from a distance but full of jagged rocks that stuck out like spikes on the wall and at the base. Dog sniffed around the area, wagging his tail. Seeing the black circle, Joe scrambled forward and knelt down by it, comparing it to the journal. The rest of the group filled their canteens and soaked their bandanas in the river. Joey traced his finger through the mark. "This is it," Joey said with a big grin, feeding the energy of the place. Belle rushed over and put her arm round him with a smile. "Oh my God, you're right!" "This is a piece of family history," Joey said as he stood. "From this point, the chest should be buried 10 feet west." He walked back down the path, using his size 12 hiking shoes as a measuring stick, and brushed an X across the spot. Coz removed the Infinity metal detector from his backpack, turned it on, and gunned the ground. The device gave a favourable reading, beeping in rapid waves. "This is where we'll start. Ladies, at ease. You can go swimming or whatever. We have to get this hole at least 4 feet squared."
"I'm digging with you guys," Belle insisted.
"Okay, if you insist, babe," Joey said.
"Well, screw that. I'm just going to relax in the sun and catch some rays," Leslie said.
The men took off their shirts. Coz untied the folding shovels, handed one to Joey and another to Belle, and they began to throw dirt. Seeing them stop, Skeet and Jethro decided to take a trail up the mountain to a higher lookout point until the work was done. Skeet tossed a wad of dip in his lower left cheek and leaned on a slanted boulder with a vista of the scene below. Jethro opened a can of tuna and ate. Leslie went swimming in a shallow spot where she could still stand along the river where the water was still, the water cold against her suntan. Dog started out monitoring the digging, but his interest waned when he heard the splashing in the water and he jumped in the river with Leslie, who found a stick for him to chase. They made a game out of leaping as far as possible off a boulder that jutted out into the river. After 4 hours of digging, they had almost finished the square. A pile of reddish-brown dirt sat in the mound. Again, Coz gunned the Infinity down in the hole. The device beeped even louder now, and they felt certain the chest lay below. The sun fell over the mountainous horizon, and the sky became less light, almost ethereal. Dog jumped down into the hole, barking and wagging his tail. The ladies started a fire near the base of the rock away from the river. Brown dirt covered every inch of Dog's hair.
"Boy, that dog is happy," Joey said, laughing.
"He smells the gold," Coz said with a sly smile. "You think?" Joey asked in a sarcastic tone.
"Yep," Coz said.
"It's a shame to stop when we may be so close," Belle said. "But it's getting dark. We have to," Joey said, wiping sweat from his brow. They put up the gear and went swimming to wash the sweat off. Skeet stopped watching, and he and Jethro spoke about times on the rodeo and bar fights they had lost. Dog joined the group in the river. Belle covered the hole with a large plastic tarp so he couldn't get back in. The ladies set up the tents. The campfire crackled, sending a trail of smoke into the mountains. Skeet whittled a stick into a point, turning to the side every so often to spit a load of dip on the ground. They couldn't light a fire without blowing their cover, so they unrolled their sleeping bags on the dirt and climbed in, fully clothed. The mountains got very cold at night in the summer, and the young women and men hugged the fire and each other to stay warm, retelling stories from camp and high school. When the stories ran out and their mouths hurt from smiling, they retreated to their tents, laughter squeaking out over the roar of the river. Before bed, Belle realized she had lost the rose necklace while swimming and worried about bad dreams. Joey assured her the spell was probably broken and wanted to tell her about Tahoma, but didn't know quite how. In the middle of the night, Joey woke to a commotion outside the tents. He peeked out and saw an enormous mound of brown fur with grey flecks rummaging around the campsite. His mistake flooded through his mind, so distracted from the allure of the treasure, he forgot to put the food in the bear box. He watched the bear, praying it would lose interest. He got the Glock out and loaded it just in case. Chuck swaggered around the camp, sniffing and poking. When he reached the entrance to Coz's tent, Joey stuck the tip of the black steel out of the plastic tent flap and waited. His hand began to shake, and he steadied his aim with the other hand. The grizzly smelled the tent before turning and walking back toward the firing. He sniffed the ground around it and then shuffled back to the trail and left. Joey fell down on the bag in relief. He immediately put the food up in the bear box and he wrote, "Bear box," on his hand in black marker so he wouldn't forget it tomorrow. A frigid morning came early. The men woke first. Coz assembled his fly rod and fished while Joey started a fire. Joey relayed the previous night's events with the bear, and Coz wondered if it might be old Sawtooth's kin, the bear their distant relative tangled with. In a half hour, he'd snagged two beautiful native brown trout and a rainbow trout and handed them all to Joey, who filleted them on a rock near the river so he could run the blood into the stream to discourage predators. The blood stained the rock burgundy. He threw it and the guts into the stream, then cleaned off the fillets in the mineral-rich water. Coz seasoned the trout with a mixture of cayenne, garlic, pepper and salt, and cooked them. The taste of the riverbed in the fish lifted their spirits. They left the rest for the ladies. By the time Belle and Leslie awoke, the hole was done. When Joey told them about the bear, Belle oozed enthusiasm at the thought of nailing him with a kill shot from her bow, but Leslie was truly alarmed. Dog came around and barked at the empty hole, implying there was something there. They rested on their shovels, their bodies and hair covered with sweat-soaked dirt. Joey got the foldable Infinity metal detector out, unfolded it, and gunned the area, which still beeped loud. "This detector is bothering me, and why is Dog barking?" Joey shouted. "Maybe Dog would bark at any hole," Coz said. "But this is chicken shit, not chicken salad, Coz," Joey said, looking at Dog. Dog smiled. "Chicken shit," he shook his head. "Maybe we overestimated his intelligence," Coz said. "I don't know. Show him your necklace again." Coz removed his gold necklace and held it to Dog's wet nose. He sniffed and ran round the hole, pointing at it with his head, and then looked back at them, barking in a frantic state. "Should we keep digging?" Coz asked. "I don't know," Joey said. "Maybe it's over to the side." The ladies came over and consoled them. Joey and Coz concluded the treasure must be a little further up the path and started a new hole next to the other one. The Infinity bleeped out in the same way it did over the other one. They agreed Dog's gold-hunting abilities were turning out to be inaccurate at best, but trusted the Infinity. After digging all day on the new hole, they broke to eat and dip in the stream to cool off. The ladies hiked round the area, fished and swam. Belle was an expert fly fisher and hooked four glorious trout. By dusk, they had completed another hole. When they hit the dirt bottom and the Infinity beeped even louder, they were baffled. Their arms and legs ached with pain and their hands had calluses and small blisters on them. Frustrated, they went swimming again, but the water polished off Joey's ink reminder about placing the food in the bear box. Belle prepared a fish stew with the trout, which they ate while sipping wine, and then retired to the tents. The boys fell asleep fast, having no reminder and little mental clarity. Joey again forgot to tie up the food. Up on the bluff, Skeet had been watching every 30 minutes or so. Seeing the empty holes, he assumed they'd found the treasure. Getting impatient, he told Jethro they were going to move in. They went down to the camp, creeping over to the holes to check for treasure. Jethro lifted the tarp and climbed all the way down into the first one. A voice kept telling Koz to wake up in his sleep. He managed to open his eyes and heard whispers in the distance. Slipping on his trail shoes, he left the tent and walked toward the shadow with a flashlight. When Skeet heard the footsteps behind him, a smile twisted across his crude face as he unsheathed his buck knife and waited.
"Hey, what the hell are you doing in our camp?" Koz asked.
Skeet turned, and Koz looked stunned when he recognized the face from Wild Bill's.
"It's you! How did you get here?"
"We followed that stupid chicken all the way from Bama. We've come for the treasure, and you're going to give it to me."
He flashed the knife with an awful smile. Koz backed off, holding his hands in the air.
"Look, we don't want any trouble. I'm sorry about the bar, really."
He spit on the ground. "You're sorry I got a knife.
The holes are empty. See for yourself."
Koz began to step back and Skeet lurched towards him, crouching over with the knife. Jethro wiggled out of the first hole and scampered into the second. Skeet swiped at Koz with the knife, cutting his shirt across the chest. Koz backed off fast and grabbed an onyx stone, threatening to throw it. Skeet lunged at him and Koz released it, but Skeet dodged it and tackled him to the ground. He held the blade to Koz's throat with his other forearm pushing down on his neck. He yelled to Jethro,
"Anything in there, Jet?"
Jethro lifted up the tarp.
"Just some dirt." "Where's the loot? It's not in the fucking holes."
"I told you already, we didn't find any,"
Koz gasped. Skeet spit in his face.
"You're lying to me, boy," Skeet said, pushing harder on his windpipe. "I want that damn treasure."
Suddenly, a crash came through the bushes to the side of the path about 50 feet away. Skeet maintained his hold, but turned his head to look. Seizing the opportunity, Koz knocked the knife out of his hand and kneed him off into the path. The gigantic bear, Chuck, galloped up the trail straight for them. Koz hurried back and dived for Joey's tent, waking Belle and Joey. Belle was up fast and, after hearing Koz's explanation, got her carnage bow out. Chuck ran toward Skeet with the force of a dislodged boulder on a mountain. Skeet crawled toward the first hole to take cover and yelled to Jethro to stay in the second. Belle fumbled but managed to load an arrow. Koz watched over her shoulder while Joey stirred. She set her mouth and narrowed her blue eyes before firing at the bear's right shoulder. The arrow flew over the beast and into the river. She got another and knocked it, her hands shaking. Joey was up now, watching from behind, and decided not to draw the gun. The formidable beast must have weighed as much as 2 black bears. He continued forward with his body mass swinging back and forth under his titanic weight. He was close to the hole when she fired the arrow, which soared off into the night, grazing the bear's left ear and landing in the river.
"Damn it," she thought.
She remembered what her father Will taught her, to play music in her head to focus when shooting. She selected something calm and soothing, Claude Debussy's Clair de Lune. Skeet dived into the hole under the blue tarp just before Chuck reached it, clawing off the tarp and pawing down at him with foul-breathed saliva dripping off his fangs onto Skeet's shirt. Leslie was awake and alert, looking out her tent. Joey held the Glock in his hand behind Belle. Dog was next to him. Belle got an idea. She took a bandana and wrapped it just below the head of the arrow with the cloth and tied it, leaving the tip exposed. Then she soaked the cloth in some gasoline from the portable stove and lit it, then knocked the flaming arrow and fired. The arrow planted beautifully behind the beast's arm. He roared and whipped round, glaring at the tents. The burning part of the stuck arrow spread, devouring the fur like kindling. The pain drove Chuck instinctively to the shallow part of the cold river where the water sizzled it. Belle's hand shook as she lowered the bow. Her hair stuck across the forehead and Joey hugged her.
"Nice shot, babe."
"I told you I was good with a bow."
"Well, you weren't lying."
Koz's kinder heart sent him running out to the hole to pull the guys out in case the bear returned, but Skeet snapped out and forcefully lunged at Koz, pushing him back to the river's edge.
"We've just saved your life."
"Like I care, you dirtbag. I want to get that treasure or I'll have your head."
Belle was already out of arrows as she could only carry 3 on the bow's arrow holder itself. Joey pointed the gun but didn't want to shoot. He yelled,
I have a gun, you bastard! You're too big of a pansy to shoot me, Skeet screeched back at Joey before leaning down to pick up the knife quickly and then swiping it at Coz, who dodged it to the side. Close to the edge, Coz's right foot slipped, sending him off the ledge into the river. The temperature had dropped since the sun left, and the cold water jolted him. He sank deep, and the current began to draw him downstream, but he managed to grab onto a loose root coming out of a naturally made shelf where fish nested in the bank of the river wall. Running out of air, he pulled up the shelf toward the surface. Reaching for a second hold, he touched something square with bulky edges up in the nook. He opened his eyes, but it was murky and the water stung them. He let it go and lifted himself up. He gasped for air at the surface, holding onto a tree root from the dirt bank. Skeet and Jethro thought the current had washed him downriver and went for the tents, where they assumed the treasure was hidden. They didn't know Chuck had waded out of the water, thirsty for blood at the scent of his own. When he spotted them, he charged. They ran, following the river upstream with him on their tail, growling a beastly moan. They went around to the holes, and when he caught up to them, the river was their only choice. They jumped in. The current caught them and took them past Coz, who watched from the embankment, amused. The bear jogged along the river's edge, tracking them like a bloodhound. Coz figured they would float far downstream before reaching a low current or beaching on the stony shore, or maybe not until after the waterfall, perhaps. Chuck would follow, or he might even come back. He knew they would be back as long as they were alive. Coz raised himself up and informed his crew that he'd located something man-made on a shelf in the water. Joey and the ladies were ecstatic. He and Joey plunged into the river together. They grabbed a hold of it, but it was too heavy to lift to the surface. While Belle and Leslie held their large flashlight for them, they rigged ropes around the chest. Then Belle lassoed the rope around a small tree trunk and helped hoist it from above. Dog was hysterical, barking and pointing at the chest when it hit land. "Wow," Belle said, combing her hand along the side of the chest. "Is this it?" "Must be. Let's open it and see what's inside," Leslie said. Joey and Coz shook from the cold water. They dried off while Belle and Leslie packed up the tents to leave the area. The weight of the chest was such that the only way they could carry it was to rig two long limbs under each handle. Their packs were too heavy with the extra weight, so they had to ditch the tents and a few other non-essentials. Their headlamps lighting the way, the trail took them upstream further into the mountains. They desperately wanted to go back to Camp Big Bear, but needed to open the chest in the new location and divide the treasure. They cut away off the main path onto a pitch-black trail, which was wide enough that they could walk with the chest. After travelling a quarter mile, they crossed an old, overgrown railroad track. In the clearing, there were two hitched, abandoned boxcars, overgrown with wild plants and weeds. The red metal walls had the faded words "Pacific" across the side. Another word after it had been worn off by the elements. The clearing seemed like a good place to camp, so they set the chest down and started removing their sleeping bags. Rain began to fall hard and fast, and having ditched their tents, they headed for the boxcar. Joey swung the big sliding door open, and dust rose into the wet air, and thick rope-like tails scurried to the corners. He shined the headlight through the door into the dark and dusty interior. "Looks as dry as a bone. Let's hoist the chest up," Joey said. They slid the chest in, which screeched along the wood floor. Joey entered first, with Belle right behind him. He complimented her lack of fear. She thanked him, explaining that her fear seemed to be gone. "It was sexy how you took out that bear with a torched arrow," he said, smiling at her. "Well, I got more where that came from." "Would you all cut it out?" Leslie cried, stopping at the door. "You might not be afraid, but I am. I hate rats." "Come on, Leslie. Skeet will never find us in here," Coz said. "I'll get the rats out, and in the morning we can go back the northern route. Skeet will never suspect it. They'll most likely be waiting for us on the same trail." She waited at the entrance, getting soaked. Belle shined a light in the corner where the rats should have been, but they were gone now, having fled through a hole in the neighbouring car. "Look, Leslie, they're already gone. I thought you were a nature buff," Belle said. "I am. I just hate rats."
Joey laid down the pack and sat up against the wall. Bell leaned into him. Cos filed in across from them. Leslie entered with her flashlight in her hand in addition to her headlamp, shining the light up and down the dust-covered walls with a look of pure hysteria. She closed the door behind her, leaving a small opening for air, and took a seat close to Cos. Cos lit a small sterno fire, and the ladies unfurled sleeping bags, using them as covers to shield from the cold. Cos and Joey inspected the chest, which had a lock. The mud on it was like wet, chunky cement. Joey ran his hand through his curly wheat-coloured hair, pushing it back and studied the lock. The rain sang outside. "What do you think?" Cos said. Joey didn't say anything, but pulled out his Leatherman, attempting to jimmy the lock open. No luck. The ladies slowly lost interest and began to humour themselves by flicking Dog's stub tail with their fingers, acting innocent when he turned to confront them. He was at full attention in front of the chest, cocking his head to the side from time to time in an attempt to decipher Joey's actions. Joey decided to blow the lock. He took some gunpowder, duct tape, and a fuse to create a small bomb that he attached to the lock. He motioned them to move out of the car until after the blow. He lit the fuse and ran out after them. Boom! The lock blasted loose. They re-entered, and he glided over to it, waved the smoke away, and attempted to open it. The top gave a bit, but was stuck around the edges, so he used the butt of the Leatherman to knock off some of the mild crust and pry the top open. The ladies' interest returned as they surrounded the chest, waiting to see what dreams it held for them. Leslie thought of her father's store. Stanford flashed before Belle's eyes. Lifting it, he shined the mag on the contents. A thick layer of moist mush topped it off. He removed his shirt and used it like a sponge to soak up the mud. Below, he saw gold with water around and between. He and Cos pushed the chest to the open boxcar door and tilted it, draining the water out. The action revealed bricked gold bullion, stacked side to side and top to bottom. Joey's mouth dropped open and Cos's eyes widened.
"Oh, let me see, let me see," Leslie said, getting a view over Belle's shoulders.
Joey and Cos moved their heads over, making the contents visible to the ladies.
"Good Lord," Leslie said. "Ain't that the prettiest thing you ever did see?" Belle joked.
Joey held up a bar, inspected it, and passed it to Belle. "Your gold, madam."
"Why, thank you," Belle said.
"Madam," he handed another to Leslie.
"Why, thank you, sir."
Joey smiled and threw an arm round Cos.
"I can't believe we actually found it, bro," Cos said. "How much do you think it is?" Belle said.
"Each bar is a pound, and a pound is worth about $1,700. This chest must weigh at least 150 pounds. Can you do the math on that?" Cos said. Leslie took out her iPhone and ran the numbers. "A little over 4 mil, split four ways. Yes and no, taxes will take a chunk. We give Tuck 10% and donate half. Hopefully, there's no Uncle Sam finder fee other than the taxes," Joey said. "Well, we may not be millionaires, but the money will go a long way," Belle said.
"Why on earth was it in the river?" Cos asked.
"To hide it, I'm sure," Joey said. They talked a while until Joey finally closed the trunk and he and Belle climbed into the double bag. Cos and Leslie bagged up also, and Dog plopped in front of the chest as if to guard it. Joey lay on his side, staring out into the rain with a feeling of satisfaction in his heart. Belle and Leslie fell asleep fast. A cool wind blew through the cracked door from the outside. When it hit Joey's bones, he thought about the hot weather in Latch and Teddy. Being back in California had made him realize that although he loved it, it was far from the warm waters and his dad. The treasure gave him options. He could go to graduate school in Miami and buy a boat like Teddy, live on it, return to business school, and hunt in his spare time. He would be far from Belle, though, if she went to Stanford in Palo Alto, California. He glanced down at her and thought it was not an option. He remembered what Jack had told him. Maybe he could convince her to come with him. He looked over at Cos, who lay awake with his hands folded behind his head. He smiled as he stared at the boxcar ceiling, with Belle asleep by his side. "Hey, Cos, can you believe we've found it?" he whispered.
No, me neither, Joey said. How do you think Dad is doing? We should call him now.
Let's call him in the morning. It's so late and I don't want to frighten him, although he is tougher than a one-eyed alley cat.
Yeah, he's got grandes bolas, right, bro?
Ha! Yes, of course. That honcho has big balls for sure.
I sort of hate that about him sometimes, though, you know.
I know what you mean. He can be tougher than Wilt Leather sometimes, but it's all a big act. He's just a big baby, a kid at heart.
Yeah, Joey paused, watching his brother.
'Cause I've decided to leave California.
Really? Where are you going to go? Cos said.
Maybe Miami.
Without Belle? I thought she was going to Stanford,
Cos whispered. Hopefully she'll come with me, but don't tell her yet.
Great. I'll enjoy having you all round in the FL, he said.
Hey, man, not a word. Since my scholarship is bust, maybe I could move down to Miami with you, play baseball with the Hurricanes.
With this gold, I can certainly settle my debt with the school, Cos said.
Sweet. We could start a treasure hunting biz together with our capital.
Sounds good to me, but I'll have classes.
So will I.
All right, Joey said. Joey looked up at the ceiling.
Good night, Jojo.
Good night.
Joey's new plan gave him a sense of being in control. He hated the feeling of not knowing what was going to happen next or how things would work out. He could see him and Belle on a boat off the coast of Florida, and it felt good. It felt right.